atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here on this day. Alan West at the bottom of the hour brings us inside Texas, the battle for the border, as well as what's going on in Israel. We're also going to have standing by right now is Kerry Kupek Urban. She's going to be with us shortly to break down what's happening with the latest Trump challenges and all the way down the line, the one in front of us and the one that on the other side of us, and answer a very simple question. How are you allowed to stop traffic on bridges, in tunnels, through roadways, in the busiest cities in America? How? I understand freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, but not in a situation like this that inconveniences so many. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Israel bomb! USA!
That's in New York City. New York City. Decision time for Israel as they consider retribution for Iran's attacks. Meanwhile, pro-Iran, you just heard, pro-Palestinian protesters choke bridges and major highways. This should not be tolerated. These idiots need to be educated.
Number two. Socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment is a lot. And anti-intellectualism and elitism. Right. What is driving many of these anti-establishment, are Trump voters.
Hey, you dummies, stop following Donald Trump. Yes, the nation's rich, famous, and self-obsessed just can't understand why Trump is more popular than ever, despite their disdain and incredibly negative reporting. They have not yet realized that Biden and his left-wingers are Trump's greatest asset.
Number one.
For so long, there's been this desire, there's been this indignation about his lack of accountability. Well, it is happening.
We think of ourselves as American exceptionalists, but we actually are not. And it is nice to see that this day has finally arrived.
Right. I don't know what the hell that one thing has to do with the other, but that's the magic of other networks. Trump on trial, case one, day two. The circus commenced in a grimy New York City courtroom as a disturbed former president was forced to sit and watch 500 people disqualify themselves from being jurors. Nine survived. We will talk about the big takeaways from day one and preview day two. Kerry, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian.
So what stood out yesterday? One thing I know, the Access Hollywood tape, the prosecution wants to admit it. They said no, but you can read the transcript. The president says, hey, I like off for my son's graduation. For now, the judge says no, and you can't go to the Supreme Court hearing on immunity. What else emerged for you?
The fact that the judge ruled that Michael Cohen's guilty plea related to campaign finance violations. So when he pled guilty to violating campaign finance law, can't be used as evidence of Trump's guilt of the same crime. And that's important, Brian, because it appears that's what Bragg is trying to get at. You know, we've talked about how he has revived this case because the statute of limitations had run on the misdemeanor charges of falsifying business records by tying them to felonies of allegedly concealing an underlying crime. Of course, it's unclear what the underlying crime is. Most people think, because he said, well, you know, vaguely that Trump violated state and federal election law. But that's why the judge ruling that Cohen pleading guilty to that can't be used as evidence of Trump's guilt in that, because that's going to play to the heart of the case.
So Cohen pled guilty to campaign finance?
Right,
violations.
So he violated campaign finance laws. He pled guilty to that. Now, by the way, whether he really was guilty or not, unclear, but he did. And the judge said that that can't be used as evidence of Trump's guilt of the same. Again, important, because it seems that's what Bragg is going after for this underlying crime.
So when I read this, and by the way, you got a lot of misinformation, but I read that nine are getting a second look. How many were seen roughly yesterday? And how many? You have up to 500 possible candidates to fill 12 spots and 6 alternates, right?
Yep, they brought in 96 yesterday. I think 50 were already dismissed. The judge has, just as a matter of logistics, suggested 10 to 15 minutes for interviews. The defense requested 30 minutes for first round of interviews. And don't forget, each side gets 10 challenges, preemptive challenges, so that basically if, you know, one side picks a juror the other side doesn't like, 10 times they're able to use that get-out-of-jail-free card and say, no, they're out. So that will also play into this.
How would you characterize the mood of the president? Were you in there?
I wasn't in there, but I was reading very closely the notes of our colleagues who were in there. It sounded like he was engaged. Look, he has to be careful because the judge is going to be looking at him very carefully. You know, if Donald Trump even raises his eyebrows in a certain way, I could imagine the judge or the prosecution attempting to misconstrue that or as intimidation. So he's got to be careful. And speaking of which, you know, Brian, this gag order, Trump has a very valid point about the unfairness of this gag order. And we talked about this yesterday on Fox and Friends. If the judge is going to slap this gag order against Donald Trump, how can he not do the same thing against Michael Cohen? Cohen is doing these media interviews. As I said yesterday, he is not under penalty of perjury when he goes on TV, so he can say whatever he wants, true or false, without any consequence. And Trump is stuck in the position of not even being able to respond to the attacks.
So the question is that the DA is already trying to say that Trump violated the gag order three times in social media posts and should pay $1,000 for each violation. The judge says he'll announce he'll hear the arguments about that.
That's correct. And, we'll see what he does. But, a judge, and I always make this point, it's not just about getting a decision right. It's not judges just don't, or at least the way things used to be, or in a fair and free justice system, judges care about getting a decision right. It's also about the appearance of impartiality. So, again, if you're going to slap that gag order against Trump, how can you not do it against Michael Cohen? And I think this argument is going to be especially interesting, or his decision is going to, again, indicate further where this judge's head is at, given that Cohen is saying what he wants about Trump publicly, and then Trump is not allowed to respond.
Do you think that he might change his mind on that when he starts seeing these plethora of interviews he's doing?
I don't know, because he allowed him to do it thus far. It's not like he didn't think he was going to do that. So he could have ordered a gag order against Michael Cohen before this in the days leading up to the trial. Or if he wanted to look fair, he could have just said, look, these apply to both witnesses and Donald Trump. But we're not going to talk about witnesses in the case because the gag order allows Trump to talk about the judge and also Alvin Bragg, the DA, but not witnesses. So why shouldn't that apply across the board? Then why can witnesses talk about Donald Trump?
So this case is essentially about not necessarily the payments, but where that money came from, because you're allowed to. So if I'm running for office and somebody wants to say something disparaging about me and I just want to work in agreement, the business partner wants to blame me for the defunct business. So I just say, hey, I'm going to pay you off. Let's run an NDA. I don't want you to hurt my candidacy. That's allowed. But what are they saying Trump's not allowed to do?
No, it's the million-dollar question, Brian, and that's the problem with all of this. The accused has the right to know what they're being accused of. That is a fundamental principle of a fair and free justice system and also a hallmark of the Sixth Amendment, something we're all guaranteed as American citizens. And here, all Bragg has said is that Donald Trump violated state and federal election laws. But again, how? Unclear. I mean, the way one could look, I guess potentially he could say, well, these hush money payments were essentially campaign contributions that Donald Trump made to himself and then did not report it. But I mean, think about the gymnastics one has to do to get there.
Right.
It's crazy. And the other question, too, is this is a state court. If he violated a federal law, federal election law, that federal campaign finance law, how can that be brought in state court? And that's something that legal analysts across, both sides of the political spectrum have been asking. So it's unclear, not just factually, but legally, how Alvin Bragg intends to pull this off.
So we still don't know that second charge.
He has said in a press conference that he violated state and federal election laws, but didn't really give the background as to how he did that exactly. So we're all going to find out together, I suppose. But one point I just wanted to go back to that you made earlier on the Barron's high school graduation and Trump asking to be excused for that day, that would have been something very easy for the judge here to grant up front. It would have cost him no capital. It probably would have endeared him a bit to the jury because a person's high school graduation is a very special event that universally humans understand that and what that means. And everyone would have understood. And now, actually, the judge has put Democrats and Trump critics in the position of potentially defending his decision to not let him attend. Now he says he's not going to make that decision yet. He should have. It was foolish. It would have actually undercut the criticism of him being unfair towards Trump.
It would have helped. I don't think anyway. But the fact is, he did donate to Biden, even though it was not a lot of money. He donated to him.
A few small dollar contributions. That's right.
Yeah, but why? I mean, why the hell would he do that? And if I'm Trump, I'm ticked at that. It doesn't matter how much. It matters how you feel about
right.
it. And this is the guy standing in Joe Biden's way of staying in the Oval Office. And the fact is, I think it does matter that his daughter has these huge contracts from Democratic candidates like Adam Schiff, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, because she can benefit from a ruling against Trump, given what she does for a living. So that puts her father in a dicey position. And it's something that he really should have considered, that the appearance of impartiality, that his adult child could benefit from him making a decision, or I'm sorry, even though this is going to go to a jury, but how he'll conduct himself towards Trump, that could benefit her. But Brian, another thing that I'm keeping an eye on today, and I want to make sure that our listeners are aware of this, there's a very, very important case happening at the Supreme Court this morning, starting at 10 a.m. It involves a January 6th defendant, and how the Supreme Court decides this case could actually directly affect the January 6th Donald Trump case. And
okay.
And specifically, this case, this January 6th defendant has asked the court to throw out the obstruction of an official proceeding charge that that he was charged with. Why that matters is that's at the heart of Jack Smith's case against Donald Trump. So if the Supreme Court were to decide that this interfering in an official proceeding did not apply to this gentleman because it, as it's been understood in the past, only applies to evidence tampering, and we saw that in the Enron case, that could have a huge impact on Jack Smith's case against Trump. It would effectively cut his case in half.
So what he did, what they're saying is that Trump incited, but they didn't cause an interaction with his speech, right?
It's what they're saying. So one of Jack Smith's charges against Donald Trump is that he obstructed an official proceeding, and that was the certifying of the election.
Okay.
Because of what he said around it. So here, this person was also charged, among other things, with interfering in an official proceeding because of his role that mm-hmm. he played at the Capitol. But if the Supreme Court says, no, that's not any official government proceeding, it's only specific to evidence tampering, or it's only specific to evidence tampering with respect to congressional investigations or inquiries, that would directly affect Trump's case and what Jack Smith is bringing against Trump, and that part could be thrown out.
Wow, interesting, because I did see that they let out about a dozen people who were charged on January 6th before this decision was even made.
Yes, but you have to remember that the Department of Justice continues to periodically put out press releases talking about how many people they've arrested. It's over 1,000, I think, at this point, maybe even 1,100 or 1,200. And they're continuing to prosecute. And they are combing the country for anyone who seems to even have been close to the Capitol that day.
Yeah, it's insane. So there's been, of course, we got to stop January 6th. Can't happen again. But, of course, they've overdone it. They talk about it every day. People are obsessed about it on the news. Some certain anchors, like George Stephanopoulos, that's all they talk about. Chuck Todd, it's all he talks about. The world stopped on that day, and no one could do anything different. So we'll see. So the Supreme Court will hear the obstruction case that could bar some charges against Trump. It's the first story in the New York Times today. So we will stay on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Piers Morgan recommended that Donald Trump do when the judge says he shouldn't go to the graduation. Cut 11.
Of the most pathetic, petty, self-harming acts of political suicide I've ever witnessed. Donald Trump should go to his son's graduation.
Mm.
Right?
Ooh.
Go to the graduation. Honestly, if you're watching President Trump, just go to the graduation. Every parent in America, mm-hmm. whether they like you or hate you, mm-hmm. will go, yeah, I'd have done that too. Because this case is utterly ridiculous.
So, should you take Piers Morgan Esquire as advice?
As a lawyer, no. I would not want my client held in contempt, nor would I want him to be arrested, since the judge has said to him, if he does not show up every day that he's supposed to be there, he will be arrested. However, I understand his point, and this is why I said earlier, the judge should have ruled immediately on this. This is a no-brainer. It's easy. It would have endeared him a bit to the jurors. It's something that everyone can get around. And again, it's going to put Democrat pundits in an uncomfortable position if they have to defend on air or in media interviews in general that Trump should not be allowed to go to his son's high school graduation.
Because this is a class E felony he's been charged with. And he has no prior history, 77 years old. This is not a murder case. So when people go, well, you know, that's what happens when you're in a criminal trial. Really? For something like this?
Something like this. A first-time nonviolent offender who all of us are not exactly sure still what exactly crime he committed with respect to the felonies.
And you're the lawyer, and you can't figure it out either.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I was watching, I think it was on CNN or MSNBC yesterday. They had a so-called fact checker on Trump, and they said, well, he says that all legal scholars say that this case is terrible. And then this fact checker said, well, it's not all, but a lot. Okay. All right.
I mean, I got that guy. That guy pops up all the time. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Carrie, fascinating. Great work. Carrie Kupek-Urban, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Listen, I went really long, but I'll be able to squeeze in a couple of calls next. 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on, but I feel we're covering it for you.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
President Biden, you can end this now. You know it's wrong. I know you know it's wrong. And I know I sound like a broken record. And I know that you're going to lose this election, in part because too many people are going to stay home. They're not going to vote for Trump. They're not going to switch their vote from you to Trump. No, that is not how this is going to play out. As what happened to Hillary in Michigan, she lost by 2 votes per precinct. 2 for the whole state. 2. And that's what's going to happen to you.
That is Michael Moore. I know. I didn't know what I was hoping that he was off the scene, but he's got a podcast and he's trying to warn Joe Biden that he's going to lose to Donald Trump because he's so pro-Israel. Meanwhile, he's halfway. He's pro-Israel in certain things and anti-Israel when things get tough. You know, he is all over the map on this, and he should just do the right thing and not worry about it and don't listen to Michael Moore. I'm not saying he doesn't understand the working class of the American people. He does. I'm not saying he's not bright. He is. I'm saying I disagree with him. He's a socialist who's fundamentally anti-American. But what he's trying to say is you're going to lose because of your support for Israel? Really? The same guy that basically said you do one more thing wrong in Gaza, we're conditioning all your support and your aid? First one, I think, in American history to do so? I don't think so. But it just goes to show you how divided the base of the Democratic Party is. You see Bill Maher going back and trying to sober up his party, too. You see Tlaib coming out screaming death to, not condemning death to America chants in her own district. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is next. We'll talk about what Israel could be doing next, where it is they're looking at targets to strike in Iran. And Iran says, hey, we got Russian weapons now. Look out.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
When you start chanting death to America in America, I mean, I got it. Charlottesville was real bad when they were chanting death to Jews will not replace us. But on American soil, and there are people who see me say this, oh, he's a conservative now. I'm a conservative. I have not changed. I always liked America and thought death to it was bad.
Yeah, we play it all the time. But I just love the logic of somebody on the left. It gives me sense that we're going to go back to at one point debating the things we always pointed about taxes and health care and how much money we'd be spending on the military or not spending on the military. Those are the old days. You know, we're talking about infrastructure. Those are not the things we're talking about now. We have people in the streets, Chicago, San Francisco, New York City, Wall Street in particular, chanting death to America, hands off Iran. And these are American kids, it seems, by the looks of them, who are in their 20s, who are convinced that Iran should be left alone, convinced that Israel's bad, and that America should die in some cases. Alan West put on the uniform for years to make sure America did not die and must be stunned by what he hears and the logic that Bill Maher brings to the table. Colonel, welcome back. Your thoughts about what took place yesterday.
Well, it's great to be with you. And, you know, think about this, Brian. Once upon a time in this country, my father's generation, they lied. Young people would lie about their age so that they could go and fight for this country against the evil of Nazism, Imperial Japan, and also fascism, Italian fascism. Now we have young people taken to the streets and cheering on and advocating for an Islamic terrorist organization to kill Americans, not even, 6 months ago, and still holds Americans hostage if they're still alive. And, oh, by the way, supported a terrorist organization 40 years ago in 1983 that killed 234 Americans, Marines, soldiers, and sailors in the Beirut barracks bombing. So I think the problem is that we don't talk to our young people about history. We don't let them know the truth and what's going on. And so all of a sudden they have fallen to this propaganda to side with terrorist organizations.
What is the attraction? I mean, if you say to me, hey, I can't get my kid to go to school. He wants to go to the beach and, you know, she wants to party all the time or doesn't see it. Those are the old days. Now we go, hey, there's a Hezbollah pro-Hamas Palestinian demonstration. Let's go. What is the attraction? The cultures are terrible. The leadership is awful. Their mission is to live for another life, not this one. Tell me what the attraction is.
Well, the attraction is that we don't have the hard conversations with our kids. The attraction is that there's no consequences and ramifications with our kids. You know, if I had gone out and tried to go into some pro-Hamas, a terrorist organization rally or, you know, even something like a Black Panthers rally or something along those lines, my dad would have beat me silly. He'd say, look, you're in my house and you're going to live by my rules. And most important thing is you get an education. And he would have also explained that to me. So I think that what we have allowed is for these professors and teachers and whatever to poison the minds of our young people. And we have not stood up and we have not challenged it. And again, we continue to allow these young people to go out and do these things. And like I said, you can shout death to America. There's no consequences. We don't have these hard conversations, say that this is a terrorist organization. And if you had been at that, you know, peace concert, they would have killed you too. When I hear queers for Palestine, do you understand what they would do to you in Gaza Strip? So it's about time we took the gloves off. And I saw that episode with Bill Maher, and I have to give him credit because he said, yes, we can have these discussions about the bad things in America, just the same as Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan used to do. But we need to have some tough conversations in America, Brian. You know that.
So I asked Andy McCarthy. I just said, you know, I don't know this law. Why are you allowed to block a bridge for 4 hours? Why are you allowed to subscribe to a terrorist organization? If you're pro-Iranian, you need to have your head examined because even the Iranians are not pro this Iranian government. There's all types of unrest in that country, especially if you're a woman. They kill you for wearing your hijab wrong. So he said, this is what he wrote to me. He goes, under the First Amendment, people are allowed to brandish flags of a terrorist organization. But I would say this, Hamas and Hezbollah have been formally designated as foreign terrorist organization in the U.S. for 30 years, which means it's a serious felony to give them material support. Waving a flag is not material support, however. If I were as a prosecutor, I would deduce that a lot of these people at these demonstrations do support these terrorist organizations in various ways, and that might be prosecutable. I would be trying to identify them, determine whether they're in the country legally, investigate them about their fundraising, their recruitment. I'd also figure out whether to take direction from terrorist organizations. For example, if Nasrallah says we need to have a day of rage against Israel and the U.S., and then a bunch of people wave Hezbollah flags and resist police, then you go ahead and you could charge him. You might have a solid case. I mean, that's where we're at right now. Do you believe this?
Well, I would, you know, Andrew McCarthy is a brilliant lawyer. He's been a prosecutor. But common sense Alan West will say that if you are out there waving the banner of a terrorist organization, you're providing material support and comfort to that organization. You're aiding
so, yeah.
and abetting them. You are furthering their propaganda. Rashida Tlaib, in my estimation, should not be a member of the United States House of Representatives. Definitely she should not have access to any type of intelligence or what have you.
Well, on what grounds can you kick her out? Congressman, on what grounds can you kick her out?
Once again, the felony of aiding and abetting a designated terrorist organization,
yeah.
providing them material support and comfort, and being a propagandist for a terrorist organization. Now, could you imagine if after 9/11 we had a member of the United States House of Representatives that was defending al-Qaeda? But that's basically what you have. What would have happened if you had people that were in the streets of the United States of America after 9/11 carrying the flag of al-Qaeda, the black flag, or carrying the flag of ISIS? What would we have done? And so I think it's about time that we start to delineate between freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of expression. You know, they have no problem censoring us as we talk about COVID. But now you're talking about chanting and supporting a terrorist organization that has just killed Americans and took Americans hostage. And for the past 40 years, this country, Iran, and its proxies have been waging war against the American people and killing our soldiers on the battlefield. Qasem Soleimani is a great example of that.
Well, I don't know how much longer we're going to tolerate this, but I want to give you another idea. I watched Chris Sununu spar with George Stephanopoulos, and he just said, how could you be supporting Trump? Said you were for Nikki Haley, and you said that that speech he gave led to the unrest on January 6th. He goes, yeah, because the alternative. He couldn't believe it. And then I hear Katie Couric on with Bill Maher, and she just also can't figure how you could – doesn't know why anyone would support Trump. Cut 16.
Socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment is a lot. And anti-intellectualism and elitism is what is driving many of these anti-establishment, which are Trump voters. I don't know if you've ever been jealous of what someone else has or resentful. It is such a corroding and bitter, almost bile feeling.
So Trump voters have class resentment. They're anti-intellectual, anti-elitist, and they just resent and are jealous. Is that a correct assessment of people that don't vote for Joe Biden?
Well, you know, let me put it this way. Joe Biden said, if I didn't vote for him, I wasn't black. So now, you know, my skin color determines who I should vote for. I have a bachelor's degree and two master's degrees, but I guess I'm anti-intellectual.
Yep.
I'm married to a woman that has a bachelor's degree, an MBA, and a PhD. She voted for Donald Trump, but I guess she's anti-intellectual. And this whole thing about being anti-elitist, well, it's not about being elitist. We don't like socialist economic policy, and we don't like to have elitists telling us, you know, what kind of car we can drive, what kind of dishwasher we can have, how much water we can have flushing in our toilets, what type of food we can eat. That's the type of elitism that, no, that's called tyranny. That's called totalitarianism.
Here's more. Cut 17.
The people loved him and what he was saying. Not to defend Trump, but to defend the people who still vote for him, because what they see on the other side to them is even more dangerous, because it's very closer to home. My kid is coming home from school and he thinks he's a racist. He's five. What have you been telling him? Those kind of things are what they say. That's why I'm voting for Trump.
He's right.
Yeah. Well, just the bottom line. I mean, I know that I was paying less for groceries under Trump. I was paying less for gasoline under Trump. I didn't have to worry about fentanyl poisoning or terrorists coming across the border under Trump. I did not have to worry about criminals being released back out onto the streets and, you know, killing police officers, you know, under Trump. I mean, I can go ad nauseum ad infinitum. I did not know that as a parent, if I went to a school board meeting saying that I want my kid to get a good quality education, I would be designated as a domestic terrorist under Trump. But yet all of these things are happening now, not to mention that the world is on fire. The chaos and confusion in the world, there is no safety and security. So these people are focusing on a personality, They're not focusing on policies. They're not focusing on principles.
Let me share with you this breaking news. Last week, I think we discussed Yuri Berliner at the NPR, talked about the lack of balance in newsrooms, and everyone's trying to be politically correct, but nobody has diversity of thought, how they've become activists and everything against anti-Trump, never admitted that they were wrong about the Russia investigation, never admitted they were wrong about the election in 2016, admitted they were out to do everything anti-Trump, didn't care that the laptop was real. They said if it hurts Trump, it doesn't matter. Well, Yuri Berliner has just been suspended by NPR and their new CEO. They said he accused the NPR of losing America's trust with left-leaning advocacy. Now, NPR's media correspondent David Falkenflik reported Tuesday that Berliner, NPR's news business editor, who slammed the outlet in a recent column, has been suspended for 5 days without pay. In a column for Barry Weiss, he went to everything I just mentioned, and everything he said is 100% correct. The move comes amid heavy criticism from conservatives about NPR's new CEO, Catherine Mayer, whose right-leaning pundits on social media have uncovered posts from Mayer in which he says, among other things, appeared to downplay rioting during social justice protests. I even regret reading this out loud. Right-leaning pundits? No. People that looked at her social media noticed that she's a left-wing activist with no journalism experience, was supposed to run that organization. So nothing will change, Alan West.
No, nothing will change. And remember the quote from George Orwell, In a world of deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And this is what the left does not want. You want to talk about fascism. You want to talk about, you know, censoring. You want to talk about suppressing First Amendment rights of speech and expression. That's who the left is. They do not want to have the truth to be told about them. They want to have this, you know, tyrannical control of all information. And we continue to see that happening. And this is what the people are concerned about, you know. And so, again, what Katie Couric was talking about, it's just delusional, it's deranged, and she is just part of that cabal of misinformation, the disinformation, and censorship.
Yeah, I guess we're going to find out what's going to happen. Hey, who would you pick for number two for Trump? Who do you think's the best pick?
You know, I think that you have to have someone that can, number one, compliment him as far as his policies, and is a strong communicator. But without a doubt, you've got to be picking someone that is viable to be the next president of the United States of America. And so I can't tell you a person, but I can tell you those are some of the qualities that he should be looking at.
He's also looking at people that can raise money. So that's going to be key for him because he's got to catch up. They're about 50% off where the Democrats are at.
Yeah.
Colonel, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, my friend. God bless.
All right. American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from Florida, long time, 27 years in the military. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm going to finish up this hour with your calls, I promise, and your emails, briankilmeade.com. Also, Donald Trump did speak. We'll try to give you an idea of what he just said before he entered the courtroom. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is a trial that should have never been brought. It's a trial that is being looked upon and looked at all over the world. They're calling. They're looking at it and analyzing it. Every legal pundit, every legal scholar said this trial is a disgrace. We have a Trump-hating judge. We have a judge who shouldn't be on this case. He's totally conflicted, but this is a trial that should never happen. It should have been thrown out a long time ago.
President of the United States, about 20 minutes ago, as he walked into day two of the trial, it's got to be tedious as hell. 500 people max. They've already gone through 90. 50 just quit or were tossed. And they say 9 survived. They ultimately got to get 12 with 6 alternates. I just got to share this information with you that's breaking. A second Republican says they will join to oust Marjorie Taylor Greene to oust Speaker Johnson. What a clown. Thomas Massie, who is just somebody, he's anti-everything, said during a closed-door GOP meeting that he would back Greene and amid rising frustration among conservatives at the Speaker's proposed foreign aid package. Massie's the first Republican to commit to backing her. It was still unclear what Greene plans to force the ouster vote, though she has vowed to do it eventually. Speaker Johnson said this morning and told us on Fox and Friends he's looking for four separate bills. Some people love the Israel fight. Some people like the Iranian fight. Everybody likes the Taiwan fight. And then something from Indochina. And then something from TikTok. Now, I thought the House was done with TikTok, but they're taking it up again. So he's going to put it up for a vote. That upsets them because the border's not there. He says, I can't put the border up because if I put the border up, it goes nowhere in the Senate. Now, could he use more leverage? I don't know. I'm not there. But he's got one or two vote margin, and these people sit there and pretend as he's got the Senate, he's got the White House, he's got a major majority in the House. He's just too lazy. So now we have two people looking to oust and look for another speaker. Like who? We know Jordan didn't get it, Scalise didn't get it, Emmer didn't get it. The president wants Speaker Johnson, Thomas Massie, and these people, have they ever compromised on anything in their life? What you do is this, best you can, Chip Roy, best you can, and then you go to work raising money to get more of a majority in the House, raising money to get your cause, maybe convincing a Democrat to go along with you in a red state. Instead, I'm mad at my speaker. Let's do that embarrassing election again and stop the whole country from working. Quick note, we're all waiting to see what Russia is, what Israel is going to do to Iran. So Israel, Iran just came out and says, we have new, if they get hit by Israel in response to Saturday's attack, we have new weapons, and we've got weapons they've never seen before. Talking rhetoric, no problem. But he says Russia has provided them with new weapons, and they perhaps are anti-aircraft weapons that would make it a little bit more challenging for the fighter jets, the Israeli fighter jets, to get inside that country. Where might they hit? They're not looking for casualties, Israel isn't. What they're looking for is maybe oil fields, the nuclear program, which evidently where the nuclear program is, their main nuclear facility is so far under the earth. There's only a certain amount of bunker buster bombs that have to be used, and we have them. No word yet if we'd give them to them to blow that up, or we would look for different Quds Force military bases, IRGC. So that's what meaning our. I consider us on Israel's team. That's what I think they're about doing. But Iran says if they do something like that again, we feel totally comfortable fighting you again from our soil. Good luck with that, guys. You're using Hezbollah and Hamas plausible deniability. We all know you met and choreographed the whole October 7th attacks. Now you're hitting Israel directly. You want this fight that you can't win? Guess what? Your people hate you. So the minute this thing starts turning, look for the people to rise up.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
I feel kind of pressure to be so approachable now when I walk the streets, when people come up to me. Hi, everyone, and it's the streets of New York City, which is so welcoming to Fox anchors, especially at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. It's always fun, also makes it exciting, especially if you were in town yesterday. Walk downtown, if you better. You better be open to some anti-Americanism. If you're not against burning the American flag and if it doesn't disturb you to hear death to America, then you would have loved being near Wall Street yesterday or on a bridge in San Francisco where you sat there for 5 hours. Why? Because they don't like the country, this next generation. They don't like capitalism. They love the Palestinians, love Hamas, love Hezbollah, and they even like Iran. Which is cool because even the Iranians don't like the Iranian government. But we do here in America because we have such a great idea of what hell they are living with in Iran. By the way, can I add this? Not only are they living in a situation where women are looking as second-class citizens, they're probably not even the first five classes. Just absolutely insane. Hands off Iran. Did I ever think I would hear that in America? I did. Meanwhile, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Burgess Owens. Then I'll do a simulcast with FBN with the great Stuart Varney. We'll go inside the economy. But right now, let me welcome in Ellie Beer, founder and president of Friends of United Hatzlah, Inc., Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response organization, who has done some great work and is very much needed. Ellie, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Where are you now?
I'm actually in New York, New York City.
All right, you're in New York City. So when was the last time you were in Israel?
Just last week. You know, I live in between Israel and New York, and our operations are all across Israel, so I'm totally there all the time.
What were your thoughts when you heard about the drones and the missiles and the cruise missiles and the rockets were heading Israel's way? What were your thoughts?
Well, it sounds weird because we actually are so used to the Hamas missiles for so many years. For us, Hamas missiles, which could kill so many people, thank God for Israel's Iron Dome, we're able to protect ourselves. We were worried about these new Iranian huge missiles. I'm talking about each missile is the size of a truck. And these are missiles that we're not used to, so they were quite scary. People in Israel were worried. And we were getting ready as a first response organization, United Hatzalah, to prepare ourselves for a mass casualty incident where tens of thousands of people might get injured or killed. They were aiming on any target they could to do the most damage. So I was thinking about something like lots of people getting hurt and killed.
And they didn't. Thankfully, there's one girl that was hit, and that was from shrapnel from a rocket that was shot down, I understand. Not that that's ever acceptable, but considering how bad it was, how do you feel about the new revelations that have come out that Jordan and maybe even Saudi Arabia played a role, French and UK? I mean, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells us that in the end of the day, there are some sane countries and leaders around us. And we see the ones who made peace with us in the last 30 years, like
Jordan, Egypt.
Jordan, Egypt, and the leaders, not the people, unfortunately. Jordan and Egypt, their leaders understand the importance of having a peaceful relationship in a day-to-day relationship with Israel. And then we have the few countries that made peace during the last administration, which was the Emirates and Oman and Morocco, and even Saudi Arabia. If you think about it, it's like if you were telling me 5 years ago that this is what Saudi Arabia would do, I would throw you crazy. I would actually, I would tell you have to be isolated somewhere. This is unbelievable what happened, that Saudi Arabia took upon themselves to protect Israel during a time where the whole Arab world is calling us genocidal.
It's true. And it looked like you were set to add them to the Abraham Accords until Iran sponsored this attack. I mean, they met. The Wall Street Journal had this story right away. There were meetings conducted with the IRGC, with Hezbollah and Hamas. They had even had the locations that took place. They began in August. Training happened earlier. We know what happened October 7th. To say that Iran didn't know about it, like for some reason people subscribe to that, is beyond me. When the story was apparent, the meetings and the places in the Times, everybody knew it almost instantly. So Hezbollah and Hamas is Iran. And without them, they don't do this. But now that they attacked it from their soil, they said they would do it again. If you guys attack again, here's Lieutenant General Herzi Halevay, and this is what he said yesterday about what they might do next. Cut 18.
Iran's attack has created new opportunities for cooperation in the Middle East. We are closely assessing the situation. We remain at our highest level of readiness. Iran will face the consequences for its actions. We will choose our response accordingly.
So it looks like the prime minister has asked for different targets. Could be the drone factory, could be the nuclear facilities, could be oil refineries, oil wells. They have now have natural gas. What do you think would likely happen? What do you think, what is the message you hope is sent?
Well, I'm glad we have a coalition of countries that are supporting us in this mission. Of, first of all, unveiling the evilness of Iran and their proxies. Iran is trying to really take over the Middle East, and the real goal is to get to the United States, to get to Europe. You see what they did in Argentina 25 years ago. They have holdings in Europe, Canada, the United States, and South America. And this needs to be stopped. Iran is the evil of our generation. These are the Nazis of 2024. And we need to get more countries on board to go against Iran and their proxies, which is and their supporters is, unfortunately, the worst countries in the world, North Korea, Russia, and China, and all these countries. We need to get people who understand, the countries who understand, that this has to be stopped. Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. We, as Israelis, we want to live peacefully in the Middle East with our neighbors. United Hatzalah, we have volunteers across Israel, Jews and Muslims and Christians working together in a beautiful environment, saving lives. To know that we have a country just a few, 2,000 kilometers away that is aiming all day missiles towards us, and they're planning to get a nuclear weapon to wipe us out, that has to be dealt with in the highest manner right now with the Americans and all the rest of the countries who understand the danger of this.
I talked to a four-star general, General Perkins, yesterday. He says if Iran had nuclear weapons, he thinks they would have used them on Saturday.
Definitely. There is no doubt about it. Every single one in Israel knows that. The question is if the American government understands that, the president understands that, we need to stop Iran from developing or even dreaming about developing. If you remember what happened in Syria many years ago where the Israelis knocked out the nuclear facility they were building there in Iraq. 30 years ago, Menachem Begin bombed out Iraq's nuclear weapon facilities. This is what we need to do now and focus on that. We need to get all the countries in the world to understand the dangers of these. And this is Europe, United States, South America. Iran is not aiming for Israel. Israel is only on the way. They're starting with Israel. They're going to continue to the rest of the world.
Eli Beers, Ellie Beers with us. I want you to hear what was happening in New York yesterday. Cut 25. And they were also screaming death to America in different cities. But they were saying Israel bombs, USA pays. How many kids died today? They're all reading their phones. They couldn't memorize it. Brilliant. These geniuses. How disturbing is that, Ellie?
This is devastating because as an American Israeli Jew, which I spend my time in different places, I've seen this in the West Bank. I've seen this in Gaza. 9/11, I saw the demonstrations of the Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank and East Jerusalem who were dancing from joy, shooting guns in the air, giving out candy and chocolate to everyone about, here, we're taking over America. We're going to destroy America. We're going to kill the Americans. This was in 9/11, 2001. We see the same things happening, not in the West Bank, not in Gaza. It's happening in New York City, in Chicago, in L.A. These are things that should not happen here. These people who are coming in here, the United States, and they're getting citizenship, God bless them if they get a job and they send their kids for education and they have a beautiful family. But if they don't, and this is what they choose to do, they should not stay here.
Right.
Because they are a threat to the United States.
Absolutely.
And this should be stopped.
The American kids don't even know what they're talking about. Do they think that they're going to have additional rights in Iran? Do they think that women and men, do you think the gender fluid movement is going to really take roots and they're going to be open to declaring your sexuality in Iran and Palestine? They're so tolerant when it comes to all these alternate lifestyles. They're so ignorant about what they're doing. And they're so, and I think they're so ungrateful for the country and the opportunities that they were born with. So one woman that gets it is an Iranian-American attorney who was brought up in Britain and lived for a time in Iran. And she was, she's a TikTok influencer, and she's watching all these pro-Iranian movements and Hands Off Iran. And this is what she put out, cut 27. Her name is Erica Laban.
In what capacity have you distorted the story to make the Islamic Republic the victim? That's I think what we're most curious about. When we were screaming for the past 2 years that they were lynching us, where were you? When we were screaming that they were killing Iranian women for not wearing a hijab, where were you? When they were lynching Iranian men from cranes for protesting, where were you? When we were explaining that this is a terrorist occupying force, where were you? But all of a sudden, Everyone's graduated from Instagram School of Law to say that this is a violation of international law and Iran has the right to defend itself.
Is that on the money or what?
She is unbelievable, this woman. And everything she says, she's right. And she's Iranian. She's not Jewish. She cares and loves her country. A lot of the Iranians are under occupation by these terrorists who are controlling millions of people, 90 million people who are living in Iran. I would say most majority of these people want to live a normal life. They were very smart and educated people. And what the Iranians, the regime, are doing now are literally destroying their history, turning Iran into Afghanistan, turning Iran. They want to literally bring back the world 3,000 years back. And how they treat their women, you said like five-class citizen. The women are there just to have children and have fun. That's it. And if a woman would show a tiny bit of her hair, they would kill her. That's what they're doing to women who are showing hair in trains. And how could you demonstrate in New York or Chicago supporting these Iranians or the Hamas, which are exactly the same? Hamas killed hundreds of thousands of Muslims over the years who are not agreeing with them. They took people who are suspected to be traitors and their neighbors and their friends and murder them and tie them to the back of cars and put signs on them, traitors, to scare everyone. They did the Stalin style. And that's how they got all their people in Gaza to be scared of the Hamas. Hamas are dangerous people, exactly like ISIS. And people have to know that. You can't demonstrate in America for ISIS, and you can't demonstrate supporting Hamas. The same exact thing.
Ellie, how do we support your organization?
Thanks. So our organization, United Hatzalah, has a website, IsraelRescue.org. You can go on. We are now seeking to purchase more medical supplies, more vehicles. We need more ambulances, and which is very funny for me. I never in my life thought we're going to need bulletproof ambulances for Israel. And this is something we need, and we need the support. So I'm here in the States speaking. We're going to have a gala coming up June 4th here in the city to support United Hatzalah. And we're going to honor incredible people, Allison and Howard Lutnick, who their family and their best friends all killed in 9/11. And the connection between 9/11 and October 7th is so clear. And we're uniting the Israeli and American people together.
Yep. Clear-thinking people always know that's America's future and Israel's future. I don't know what's going on right now, but I think we've got to – it's more important than ever to understand who your friends are. If you could follow him at Ellie, Beer, B-E-E-R, U-H. You could follow him on all social media. Ellie, thanks so much.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Burgess Owens coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll do a simulcast with FPN shortly. I got some news when it comes to that NPR editor that spoke out, Retribution. And I have a second Republican that now wants to join Marjorie Taylor Greene in trying to oust the speaker. Are these Republicans idiots or what?
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I don't think he's definitely not going to be speaker next Congress if we're lucky enough to have the majority. And I think that is widely held belief throughout the conference.
That is Marjorie Taylor Greene. She is a maybe well-meaning, but can't see the hand in front of her face in terms of having a vision, a long-term plan. She, along with Tom Massey, it seems, they have not officially done it, but would move to oust Speaker Johnson, someone in their own party, for doing this, trying to get something done. Now, they're pushing for impeachments in the Senate. Got it. Number two is some people say, I don't want Ukraine funding. Okay. Democrats go, I don't know about Israel funding. Most people think Taiwan funding. Other people go, well, not doing anything unless we get the border done. So I asked Speaker Johnson today, I said, why don't you put some border in something? He goes, because Schumer won't even entertain it. It's up to the President of the United States. It's up to the President of the United States to do executive orders. Well, I don't think he wants to do that, so they're an impasse. So they're going to put up four separate spending bills. Ukraine aid vote, Taiwan aid vote, Israel aid vote. Okay? I thought it was a logical thing to do. And then let's see where they may. You only have a two-seat majority. So Marjorie Taylor Greene says, if you put that on the floor without border funding, I'm going to oust you. Tom Massey goes, me too. And I think Eli Crane does whatever is anti-establishment. So maybe he'll be the third. So they'll end up without a speaker. Do you believe this? So let him put four on the floor. Now, I think Democrats are going to come to his rescue because it's not even for them. They are being outraged huge in a huge way by Democrats. They have had the majority, and all they've done is just cut each other's knees out. They have not been nearly as productive as they should have been. So it's up to Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan to go up there and just knock these people down and knock them down to the side. He said, you got to leave this guy in place. You put him in there. He didn't even want the job. I wanted the job. Jim Jordan wanted the job. Emmer wanted the job. Steve Scalise wanted the job. He said no. So you agreed on Johnson, and now you don't like what he's putting on the floor with a two-seat majority. Donald Trump told you this is the best he can do. Incredible. I'll discuss that and so much more with Congressman Burgess Owens, another guy making a difference. He's also going to talk about what's going on with the financial aid in colleges and those forms. Don't move.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
None of that's going to happen. I don't worry about the vacate motion at all. I'm here to do my job. I don't think that's going to happen. I think what a lot of people were concerned about was us being pressed to pass the Senate supplemental again, where everything's merged together. This is what conservatives like me and all my friends, Freedom Caucus and otherwise, this is what we desire. This is what we work towards, is to have the regular process of Congress work. And that's exactly what you're going to see this week. So, again, everybody gets to vote their conscience on each of these measures separately. And I think that resolves the concern. So, no, I'm not worried about that at all.
So that speaker, Speaker Johnson, 2 hours ago, did not know at this time the news that would break a short time ago, that it looks like there is a motion to vacate. It's offered by Thomas Massie, and I guess he's chairman of the Rules Committee. Thomas Massie has come out and told Johnson, I'm going to offer this, so make it easy on yourself and just vacate the position so we can name a new speaker and never miss one. Number one, they're never going to agree on another speaker. Number two, what an idiot Thomas Massie is. You know, obviously he wanted Ron DeSantis to win. There's nothing wrong with that. But when Donald Trump comes out and says, this is the speaker, you got to be unified. You're in the backstretch now. Got to keep the House, got to keep the Senate, got to win the White House. Now we're in a situation where the Middle East is teetering on edge, desperately needs some aid. Ukraine is about to lose, even though they're better fighters. They're running out of everything. We cannot abandon another ally. Taiwan has been waiting on weapons. We could get it to him immediately. So he says, I'm going to offer all four of these measures on the floor. But for Thomas Massie, no, I want you to leave. And that means Marjorie Taylor Greene will probably join him. They just interviewed Eli Crane, the Navy SEAL entrepreneur who's an Arizona congressman. So this is getting really hairy. Perfect time to talk to Congressman Burgess Owens. Always a solid conservative, understands the big picture. And Congressman, something else that's a rare quality. You know what it's like to be on a team. And it seems like most of these people that you work with in your party have no idea what it's like to be in a team.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you were talking, Brian, I wrote the word team on my little notepad here, because that's really what it comes down to. And sadly, we have such a small majority. I mean, having a small majority is good in terms of educating American people and driving the agenda. But if you have a small majority and you have one-tenth of them, maybe less, that have no idea what it is to work together, to strategize, to look at governing, and my way or the highway, then we have a problem. So I feel we're gonna nuance our way through this.
No, you're not. You are. But Thomas Massie has just said it. I mean, he went up to the speakers to his face and said resign. I mean, What's your reaction to that? Do you think are you upset the speaker's putting these four bills out there?
No, not at all. I think the key is that our conference wants to make sure that we have a chance to vote on these issues so we can stand forward and let the American people know what it's all about. Unfortunately, there is a small group that's going to be voting against the rule that allow us to even do that, which is another issue that we have to resolve at some point in the future, that we cannot have a position where just a handful prevent our bodies from coming to the floor and voting on these things. So there are a couple things we have to work our way through. I'll say this. I have a lot of confidence in Mike. He's a great leader. I mean, this is a very, very difficult time he's going through right now. But he's listening some kind of way. I think we'll figure out a way to resolve the issues. Right now, our conference wants to make sure the border is addressed. We have to have that in some form or fashion. And then we have to stand for our friends. So there's a lot of things that we're kind of going through. Sadly, the small majority makes it very, very difficult because some want to throw a Hail Mary at every single play, and it doesn't work that way. You have to be, you know, smart, strategic, and we're gonna figure. I just have the faith that we'll figure our way through this. We have to. At the end of the day, we have to get it done.
Well, I think you're gonna end up. I thought so too a few months ago. So, you know, Kevin McCarthy, I thought was a great speaker.
Yeah.
He certainly understood the position, and yeah, he would raise $23 million by this point. Speaker Johnson's being able to raise $9 million. So you're really up against it. You're going to need – everybody needs money. You're always in a tough race in your district, right? So,
I'm fortunate. This time I don't have a primary, so I'm actually running across the country to help build our majority. The majority is where we have to focus on. So if I can make a big ask, American people, let's build the Republican majority, get the Senate, get President Trump in, and this whole thing changes. I will say this. Vacating the seat at this point would just mean total chaos. There's no one that I can think of that could take the place. That it was a unanimous vote for Mike, because we know we trust
right.
him. He's a very strong conservative. He's very smart. But there's a sense of we need to get to reality. And there, some people just don't believe that reality. That reality is something we can wish away, or we can just talk away. We'll have to figure out a way to get there, because the American people depend on us at this point, protecting our friends and also making sure that we're forcing some type of action on the border. Every state now understands that piece of it. And our national security, it depends on it.
So just to back up, because you know this stuff inside now, for people at home, in order to vote on anything, you need a rule, right?
Yes.
He says, this is my idea, but if you don't agree, if I got to go to the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee has got to, for me to put this on the floor, the Rules Committee has got to say, okay. Thomas Massey is chairman of the Rules Committee, and he says no, and you're fired.
Well, the way the rules work out, any bill they want to put on the floor, there's a rule that has to come before it. And it's been the way it's worked out for decades, that when a Democrat puts together a bunch of bills that their rule, every Democrat will vote for the rule, and the same with the Republicans. This is the first Congress we've had in which rules are being voted against. So the body, our Republican body, 98% of us cannot vote for a particular bill, because we have a handful that say, no, we don't. And this is the downside of a small majority, once again. It's become a point of negotiating whether we're going to vote for a bill, whether the rule passed first. And there's some very upset members that have been around for a long time. And just the way it should be done, the process has been kind of broken. So we have to address that also as we get into a bigger majority next
I can just tell our listeners now, this just came across. Johnson, when asked, are you going to resign? He said, absolutely. He says, I'm not resigning. This is absurd. So Democrats might have to help you, because they want everything out there. They're for the most part, they're for the Israeli aid, most, you know, not the squad. They're for the Ukraine aid, and they are for the Taiwan aid. So we know that they put them all in the same bill already from the Senate, and they said, if you put it out there, we'll vote for it. So are you okay with Democrats saving Speaker Johnson?
I'm hoping that. Yeah, first of all, we need to save Speaker Johnson, period. We cannot go as a body, go into another 2 or 3, 4 weeks of chaos when we're this close, and change the narrative of what we're trying to do in November. So November should be all about Biden and not us having chaos here. So I'm open to anything we have to do to make sure we hold on to our majority. I don't think we're going to get to the point where I vacate. I just feel that Mike will come up with a solution. My team and I were just talking about this before I got on the phone here. There's some other things that we can possibly put forward and maybe solve or deal with issues that everybody is having right now, the border, and then making sure that we're taking a piece of all those other issues that we need to have to address to make sure our friends are being supported.
All right, Congressman, there's something else. Everybody who's waiting on college and needs financial aid has been talking to me about this. There's a thing called the FAFSA sheet. So you have to fill out, and you have to tell how much money you made, what your investments are, in order to see if you're eligible for financial aid. May 1st, you have to pick a college. That's the latest day. You know, unless you're a fantastic athlete like you, where these colleges are coming to you and say, I'm going to give you a full ride, or academics, where you got academics through the roof and you don't care, or you're fortunate enough to know you don't qualify. If you're middle class or working class, you need to know how much you're going to get. What happened?
Well, first of all, I have six kids. I've gone through this process along with millions of other American parents. What happened is this. We've had something that's been working for 32 years. It took Biden 3 years to break it. And it is total chaos right now. We have 18 million kids out there who have no idea of what the next step would be. We have millions of young people who worked all their lives, parents have saved, so they get to this point where they can break the cycle, those that are underrepresented, those of this first generation, and they have no idea if they're going to make it. And the problem is if they don't make it through this phase, you don't know if they're going to ever come back or have another chance to get it done.
So what happened? Why did this break?
What happened very simply is this. When Biden came in, they had a fast pace to put this together. Instead of focusing on this, he decided to hire somebody who's an expert at litigation, an expert at wavering. So their focus was to do the forgiveness, the loan forgiveness. They have put their focus on that and taken away the resources that would take to make this work. We were actually offered more money to make sure that we got this done if they just let the loan forgiveness go, and they rejected that. So we have to understand, we have a president who does everything backwards when it comes to the American people. He cares more about his reelection than the future of our kids. And I tell you, parents out there need to know this.
I know.
They need to realize that his focus is not on you and your children. It's on him. It's always been about that. So, and this is probably the best example of showing it, because they have totally blown this thing up in a way that we're not sure even in October if we're going to have any type of order or the data is going to be correct when we get there.
I just don't know how kids decide what college they're going to go to if they don't know where the money's coming from. Congressman Burgess Owens is on it. Watch his website to find out more, and I'll stay on top of it too. Congressman, thank you.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back. We're following a series of stories. Number one, Iran has made it clear they're going to retaliate if Israel retaliates against their attack on Saturday. They say they got weapons they've never seen before, and they're using some Russian weapons. A kind of reciprocal agreement. We know they played a big role. The Russians played a big role in Ukraine. We're also following the story of a possible ouster of Speaker Johnson because Thomas Massie is looking to join Marjorie Taylor Greene in possibly getting rid of him. In fact, Massie asked him to step aside.
Time. He's about to appear magically on the right-hand side of your screen. All right, President Biden was caught once again clutching his scripted note cards during his meeting with Iraq's Prime Minister yesterday at the White House. The card even had stage directions on when to pause. What do the rest of the world think when they're looking at this, Brian?
And this is just like, what, a day? A day after one of the most horrific attacks, the first horrific attack ever from Iran soil to Israel soil, where we knocked out close to 80 drones and missiles and rockets, where there's so much to say and so much information to relay. We deserve that information. And then you're sitting next to the Iraqi prime minister. You know, we're not sitting next to what's happening today, the Malta leader, no offense. It's not a meeting with the Guam executive. This is a meeting of the prime minister of Iraq where we understand rockets were knocked out of the sky and they're pushing to oust us from our base of 2,500. Do they really want us out? Are they just saying that because of Iran's influence? This is an impactful meeting. And he can't talk off the cuff and is afraid to address off the cuff what the prime minister is doing there and the goals of their conversation. You can't do the job. The other thing is, Stuart, is that we all have days when we're a little tired. This guy was shot yesterday. He could barely get out a word. And to think that at the end of this, he actually says pause in between breaks of what his sentence is, as if to create some drama or to create some competency or some comprehension. I don't get it. It's embarrassing. This is about job ability to do the job, let alone decisions you make in the job.
and the image of America in the rest of the world. Not good, in my opinion. Brian, I have to change the subject because I'm interested in this. Iowa women's basketball star Caitlin Clark selected number one in last night's WNBA draft. Okay, watch this, please. Roll it.
With the first pick in the 2024 WNBA draft, the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
Now, no surprise there. She'll reportedly receive, or here's the surprise, a four-year rookie contract worth only $338,000. She'll get $76,000 in her first season. That's it. Brian, she's a real major league star. I thought there would be a lot more money than that.
Well, she'll get an endorsements, but this is the thing is, Stuart, is that we have the best lacrosse players in the world. I mean, they win the world championship every year, but they have to have other jobs. Major League Soccer, they have a salary cap, single entity. Major League Soccer owns it, they fan them out, and they have salary caps, but it's to the revenue that the sport produces. It's not the quality of the athletes or what you think of the players. It's the revenue that's involved. And they got a collective bargaining unit. You know, they could negotiate, but this is the revenue. If you look at most of those arenas, they're not even half full. This game hasn't been promoted. They have not done the grassroots in many of these cities to get out the next generation of girls to go watch these kids, to watch these players as, you know, the ones that show up at my clinic. I'm going to go to the Madison Square Garden. I'm going to go watch them play. So Caitlin Collins will help that. Rebecca Lobo helped. Lisa Leslie helped. All these fantastic. Sue Bird has helped. But for the most part, they need people to go. When the revenue comes up, the players will get it. It's just, it's all in relevance to what it means on the landscape. It is all about football. Number two seems to be basketball. Number three is baseball. And number four is hockey. WNBA is below the MLS That's in true. Revenue.
Yep, you got it. One more time, Brian. I'm going to completely change the subject. I want your take on pet bereavement. I know you have three dogs. Do you approve of days off for a pet bereavement?
No. As much as I like pets, you have a job to do. I know how important they are, a member of the family. If you have a personal day, take a personal day. If you have a vacation day, take a vacation day. But you can't expect companies to say, you know, I have a, you know, I got a pet guinea pig. I got a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
They're important. You can't do it. You got to exactly. make ends meet or these companies fail. People got to right. work. And all at the same time as you have vacation days for a reason. If you're that upset, and I totally understand it, take a day. But don't make right. the company pay for it.
Right. You're not going to get a day off when your pet goldfish dies, and that's a
right.
fact.
I didn't even know. How did this even come up, Stuart?
Well, we put the story out yesterday, and we were deluged with opinion emails. We're going to read some of them in the next hour.
Am I right?
Matt, we were just jammed with
them. Do I agree with you?
Brian, yes. You and I are in agreement on this, Brian. I'm
Thank
glad
you.
To say. Thanks.
I hope my dog wasn't listening. All right, that was interesting. I never thought we'd end that conversation with pet bereavement, but I'm going to roll. I mean, do I sound heartless, Pete?
No, not at all. I mean, if you have the days to take off, yeah, you could take off of a vacation day, right. bereavement day, but I don't think you should get a special designated pet day
Can't
outside of your days.
Listen, I also wonder what's real. You know, knowing, like, you know how many kids I have. So one of my kids would say, I go, yeah, one of my dogs died. Really? How many dogs you have? Well, now I got two. One died. What verification do I have? Do I need a cremation certificate? I mean, what do I need?
I guess a death certificate from the veterinarian.
Do I have to come
in
with a death? That's heartless. So you don't believe me. I got to come up with a death certificate.
Well, there's a lot of things I would need more proof of when it comes to what you're saying. So
listen,
I need not just certificates.
Just
I need second and third sources from you.
How much do you expect corporations to do? Oh, my dog died. You know, I feel like COVID's coming on. You know,
I'm going to need tomorrow because my pet pangolin died from COVID.
Pangolin, so, right? By the way, I think pangolin sales have really dropped of late. I'm pretty sure it's very tough to get one, and it's definitely tough to keep one. I do know this. Rocky passed away, came to work the next day, right? Doesn't mean I don't like Rocky, you know, but you got to keep going. The other thing is I was just reminded, too, in college, I had psych lab. You know what my lab was? I had to train a rat to press a lever. So I had this rat from the time it was born, and by the end of the semester, I realized it was a male. It was the size of a small cat.
Can I call you Willard?
Right. At the end of it, They said, Brian, I go, what do I do with the rat? They go, it's yours. I didn't want it. It's in the woods.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone, Brian Kilmeade here. A lot of breaking news. First off, I'll tell you what's happening. I got to tell you, we got a big hour coming your way. Joe DeVito's here. He's the reason why Greg Gutfeld is so funny at night. He writes all his stuff. Andrew McCarthy, one of the finest legal minds in the country, is queuing up. Just got some news to report to you. First off, evidently, at least 10 jurors have passed the initial questionnaire. I'll have Andrew McCarthy talk about that. 50 out of the 94 we tossed out yesterday. Don't know much about what's going on in there. Donald Trump did speak before he went to day two of his courtroom appearance. Number two is it looks like there's two lawmakers now who are trying to oust Speaker Johnson. Speaker Johnson, Thomas Massie approached him and said, look, I'm going to look to oust you. Why don't you make it easy like John Boehner did and just leave? Johnson says, oh, that's absurd. I'm not doing it. He just had a press conference and said, guys, we got to get to work. Why? Because he's going to offer four separate pieces of legislation, isolate Ukraine aid, isolate Israel aid, isolate Taiwan aid, and isolate Indochina aid with some type of TikTok provision. So with all that out there, that wasn't good enough. Now, I wish he had some things in the border there, but he says Schumer says it's a non-starter, that it's going to be done from the executive. I don't believe any of it. Donald Trump is the one who shelved all the legislation. So he's the one who said, I hate the legislation. Let me handle it. So the former president backs Johnson, but Thomas Massie doesn't care. And it looks like Marjorie Taylor Greene's not listening. Eli Crane is usually somebody who goes along with the heretic crowd. So that would be bad news. Andy McCarthy joins us now to talk about the trial of the century, according to CNN. Nobody's ever seen such lawless behavior. Welcome back, Andy.
Brian, great to be with you.
And first off, just your comment as an American. Have you ever seen people more determined to lose the majority in your life?
I think they just don't think of themselves as a majority. I just think besides them being dysfunctional, I just think they're a bunch of prima donnas. And, you know, for the most part, to legislate, you have to work as a unit. There's a lot of place for individual initiative and the like, but, you can't get anything done unless you have a majority. So
let's talk about the court today. Day two, it looks like 9 people were somebody that's still in the mix, especially after the questionnaire. How do you think it's going so far? Is this pretty much on target?
Yeah, it's going slow. You know, this is it's a slow process because, you know, you have an initial phase where you vet people through the questionnaire, where you're trying to get down to, like, who's worth interviewing. And then you pass them into the second phase, which is that they all have to be, you know, spoken to individually. And the goal here, which is, you know, it's slow and tedious, but it's important work. If you just do the math, they have to get to 38. I think the judge is going to keep 6 alternates. So it's 12 jurors and 6 alternates, and that's 18. Both sides have 10 peremptory challenges, so that's 20. So in order to get to the point of exercising peremptory challenges, you have to qualify 38 jurors, which means you got to get 38 people who get through the first wave of going through the questionnaires and then get through the second wave of being interviewed by the judge and the lawyers. And, you know, at that point, we'll finally be able to do peremptory strikes and start the trial, but that may take 2 weeks.
All right, so it might take 2 weeks, and the president's got to sit there every single moment of the day. Here's what he said. He wants to see if he can go to his son's graduation, and it doesn't really look like he's going to be able to do it, although they haven't made a final decision. Cut to.
As you know, my son is graduating from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. Very proud of the fact that he did so well, and was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial.
So are you surprised by the semi-ruling? It looks like he's not going to be allowed to go. He cannot go to the Supreme Court to listen in on his immunity hearing and he can't go to his son's graduation?
Well, you know, look, the judge hasn't said he can't go to the graduation yet. And I think this is one of these issues where it just doesn't really help him to raise this, because I think people who like Trump say, oh, this is unfair. And people who don't like Trump end up like the New York Times reported this morning that he didn't go to Don Jr.'s graduation. He didn't go to Eric's graduation. He didn't go to Ivanka's graduation. You know, I just think that these are the kind of things that, you know, I understand why he's harping on it, but it doesn't advance the ball with anyone. It just reconfirms people in what they think about Trump in the first place.
So we know. So we're waiting for this trial. We're here. Everyone goes back and forth on the validity of this trial. Do we even know what the second charge is? So the hush money trial, we're trying to find out what makes this a federal case. Do we know yet?
Well, it's not a federal case.
Not a federal case.
But it's a state case where the district attorney is trying to enforce federal law. And it's actually worse than that, Brian, because, you know, if it was the proper enforcement of federal law, it would be being done by the Justice Department or the Federal Election Commission, which both looked at this and decided not to proceed against Trump. But they would be applying the standards that have been developed over decades in federal law. What's happening here is not only is Bragg trying to enforce federal election law, he's making up his own version of it, which would not pass muster either with the Justice Department or the Federal Election Commission. And I think that's why he's being cagey about whether that's really the underlying other crime or not. What he's doing doesn't rise to the level, or what he wants to say is a campaign finance violation doesn't actually rise to the campaign finance law standards. So he's basically making it up as he goes along.
So I understand there's a couple of ruling here that I think works in Trump's favor. You tell me. That yep. Michael Cohen's guilty plea on campaign finance violation will not be a role in this. Can you explain to me how that shit benefits Trump?
Yeah, I'm really glad that ruling got made yesterday. I've been harping on this for a long time now, including from the day that Cohen pled guilty. To begin with, I don't think Cohen pled guilty to campaign finance violations because he was guilty. I believe he was over a barrel because of the tax and bank offenses against
him. Which had
him.
Nothing against, to do with Trump, nothing at all.
Which had nothing at all to do with Trump. And he thought that by agreeing to plead guilty to campaign finance violations, which really didn't add anything to his sentence, the sentence was driven by over $4 million in tax evasion. But by adding those two counts, he was trying to sell himself as an attractive cooperator against Trump. But the thing is, just because he says he's guilty of campaign finance violations doesn't mean anything with respect to whether Donald Trump is guilty of campaign finance violations. Cohen's plea is not evidence against Trump, and Cohen is not a competent witness in terms of being an expert to decide what a campaign finance violation is. So this has been important because in the statement of facts that Bragg filed with the indictment, he relies heavily on Cohn's guilty plea to campaign finance violations to argue that Trump is guilty of campaign finance violations. And the judge correctly said yesterday that Cohen's plea is not admissible evidence against Trump on the question of whether he violated campaign finance laws.
And that it's a big deal, right? Because you can't say, hey, your lawyer already admitted to it. We convicted him of it. And now you're just, right. You know, admitted that you did it too, and you're rolling this. They're going to say, no, throw that out. Also, you can't roll in the Access Hollywood tape. You can read the transcript. Good luck with that. But that just is another way to say this guy's capable of doing anything, I guess, when it comes to the porn actress.
Yeah, I think that was really sleazy of Bragg's team. You know, he's already the only – what people ought to understand here, Brian, is the only charges in the case, the 34 charges, are all related to Stormy Daniels. And what Bragg is trying to do is turn this into a bigger conspiracy without charging a conspiracy because he doesn't have a crime, where Trump and David Pecker from The Inquirer and Cohn got together in 2015 and decided to kill all this unflattering information.
Right.
And Bragg is going to prove up, like, Karen McDougal and this other incident involving a doorman who apparently incorrectly thought that Trump was having an affair or something with one of his domestic staff. That stuff he's letting come in. What Bragg then wanted to do, and the reason he's putting in the Access Hollywood tape, he wanted to prove other instances of sexual misconduct against Trump for the proposition that Trump was really, really worried after the Access Hollywood tape came out about all the terrible information that's out there that he needed to tamp down on. And what people need to remember here is this is not a case about sexual misconduct. It's a business record falsification case. And what he's trying to do is get as much of that kind of prejudicial information in front of the jury for the reason that unethical prosecutors do that, which is if you think the guy's a bad guy for other reasons, you might convict him of what the charges in the case are.
So I got two more things to go over. First off, this. Right now the Supreme Court is hearing an obstruction case that could affect Donald Trump as it relates to January 6th. The question whether the Supreme Court is whether a 2002 law prompted by white-collar fraud applies to the obstruction of the congressional proceedings on January 6th. What was the proceedings? They were going to verify the election. What was stopped? The verifying the election was postponed a few hours because of the raid on the Capitol after the president's speech. So part of Jack Smith's, and if I'm saying things that aren't right, interrupt me at any moment.
No, you're right. No, this is right.
So Jack Smith, part of Jack Smith's case is he obstructed the proceeding. If the Supreme Court says bar some charges against him on obstruction as it relates to other people who've been charged on January 6th, that would hurt Jack Smith's case against the former president.
Yeah, it could really blow it up in a big way. I listened to the first hour of the arguments, very interesting. But what is at stake is the obstruction statute was enacted in connection with Sarbanes-Oxley to fix a problem with federal law that made it hard to prosecute people who shredded documents. So already in the law, they had a provision that says if you corruptly alter, destroy, mutilate, or conceal records or documents, and that was a crime. And what they added in Sarbanes-Oxley was to say anyone who otherwise obstructs, influence, or impedes the proceeding. What the January 6th defendants are arguing is that that otherwise clause is controlled by what went before it, which means it's got to do with documents and altering and destroying and mutilating them. And what the government's arguing is it applies to any kind of obstructive activity that we can think of. That would in any way affect a proceeding. So what the Supreme Court's asking the government in some very hard questions right now is, well, what's the limits on this? And I thought it was very interesting. Justice Alito pointed out that, you know, you had a congressman not long ago who pulled a fire alarm. You know, did you prosecute him on obstruction? Because your theory is that if you do anything obstructive that prevents a proceeding from happening, that's a 20-year felony. So have you brought that case?
Nice.
Yeah.
Did they have an answer for that? No. Of course they did.
The answer was no.
Yeah, that's your answer. And the thing is, as it relates to life, thousands of people were arrested from January 6th. It's not just about Trump. It's about a lot of other people, correct?
It is, although a number of those people won't be able to take action to get their convictions thrown out because they pled guilty and they waived their right to appeal. So the defendants who are in the case in front of the court are the ones who actually preserve their objection to this provision.
Cut 25.
Israel bombs! USA pays! How many kids did you kill today?
And I could play other chants. I could play other chants of death to America. And I could tell you, I could show you a video, and you've seen it, of Hezbollah flags. You know, they were in on the killing of 241 Marines back in the 80s and Hamas flags. And I'm wondering, Andy McCarthy, how much do the American people tolerate under the guise of free speech when we realize this actually could be a threat to us?
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that, Brian. I mean, I was talking to our friend Martha yesterday and watching the demonstration on the Brooklyn Bridge, and it occurred to me in that discussion that I, more years ago than I care to count, was trying terrorists in the courthouse about 2-minute walk from where that demonstration was, and we played a tape of a speech that the blind sheikh who inspired the terrorism back in the 90s, including the World Trade Center bombing, where he said, if the battalions of jihad would just carry out 3 or 4 more operations like what happened to the Americans in Beirut or in Lebanon, then America would leave the region. And what they were obviously talking about was the killing of our 241 Marines. The jurors audibly gasped when they heard that. It was so blunt, the call for killing Americans. And now, you know, flash forward and a 2-minute walk from where that happened, we got people waving Hezbollah flags. So you tell me, I don't know what's happened to this city. Well, I think it's rhetorical. I think I do kind of know what happened. But again, you know, you can't have the campuses taken over by the Muslim Students Associations for 60 years, beginning in the 1960s, and then basically eviscerate the border so that anybody who wants to come in here can come and all the crazies can find each other.
And wonder what happened to America.
Then, right. You wake up one morning, you say, gee whiz, how did that happen?
Gotcha. You know. Hey, Andy, always educational. Thanks so much. Going to need you more and more. Andy McCarthy, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. We're following this story about the motion to vacate. It looks like Thomas Massie has now spoken. He's trying to move to get rid of Johnson. What a clown. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm trying to follow this fast-moving information. As it relates to the speaker, the vacate the Speaker of the House. We're also following the latest on the Donald Trump court situation. DA has now filed a motion to hold Trump in contempt of court for, I imagine, 2 posts that he had in Truth Social, which they say violates his gag order. We'll see about that. We'll see where that goes. So that'll delay things even further. Trump is in day 2. Here's Thomas Massie. He's the one who filed. Did he actually file the motion to vacate? First, he went up to the speaker and told him to resign. Listen.
The motion will get called, and then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy. And I have told him this in private, like weeks ago.
So he's going to put a motion to vacate. They're going to lose leadership. That means no Ukraine aid, no Taiwan aid. That means no Israeli aid. What an idiot. Did these guys even play on the same team in a gym class? I'm not even asking for bipartisanship. I'm not asking to go up to Hakeem Jeffries and say, meet me halfway. I'm just telling you, can you lead for a while? Are you determined to lose? This is like playing a soccer game and turning around and scoring in your own goal and wondering why you're trailing. Well, that was even a better analogy than I thought. But Kevin McCarthy is like, what did I tell you? What did I tell you? I know.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Mr. Massie seems to think that the speaker being vacated is inevitable. Do you agree with that assessment?
I don't. I mean, look, we still have to focus on doing our job, and job doesn't get any easier. We have a one-seat majority, but in the meantime, we're going to continue to do the things we've got to do to keep America safe and to address the problems that, frankly, Joe Biden's created.
You know what? I don't like that. I think he's got to be much stronger for Johnson. Come on. That's Steve Scalise, the second most powerful person in the Republican House. And then we're following this story about the move to vacate the speakership. Tom Massey's going to lead it. Marjorie Taylor Greene expected to follow. Eli Crane is considering it. And Steve Scalise should be going out there and saying, we already went down this road. We have no choice. There's 6 months left. We finish this out strong. Do the best you can to get the most positive legislation, most conservative legislation possible, and move on. But can you imagine Ukraine going another 2 months with no aid, Israel and everything else? That's incredible. We're following that story. It looks like the judge is also possibly looking to see if Donald Trump violated his gag order. They have to look two motions, evidently, with the Truth Social post. He could be looking at a $1,000 fine, which is like a nickel for you and I, for him. But Joe DeVito's with us in studio. If you're smart enough to be getting the stream, whether it's on the app or whether it's in Fox Nation, Joe's going to be at, this next weekend in Rutherford, New Jersey at Bananas on May 10th and 11th at Wonders Theater in Myrtle Beach and June 14th at the Brokerage in Belmore right by my house. But, Joe, you're not invited. I mean, I just don't want you coming over.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Staff writer with Gutfeld, outstanding comedian at Joe DeVito comedy.com. Joe, when there's a problem in the house, I always think to myself, where's DeVito?
Yes.
So, and again.
Here I am.
Steve Stilese, yeah. Do you agree with me? That's not how I want a friend watching my back.
Way to focus, guys. Way to focus, GOP.
You have two seat advantage.
I never thought I'd say I'm nostalgic for George Santos.
Right.
Let's get him back there.
He was at least entertaining.
He was entertaining. At least you knew he was going to be a bozo. But now I don't understand why they have to be their own worst enemies. Times are too serious now for this nonsense. This is stuff you do in the off season.
So I had Burgess Owens on, outstanding New York Jet and L.A. Raider. I said, Burgess, has anyone on this in Congress ever been on a team? Sometimes you carry the ball. Sometimes you're on the bench. What is possible? We're trailing by 14. Our quarterback's hurt. Got to play a different style game. Use any analogy you want. These people just get up in the morning and go, well, you're not doing what I want. I want to change.
Yeah, and I don't – who is this messiah they have waiting in the wings?
It went so well last time.
Yeah, it's like you're holding on by a thread. It's not the time to start looking for other options. This is what gets so frustrating if you're a conservative, because the left doesn't do this.
No. Nope.
The left, they back each other up, and then when they're in power, they go through and they have their night of the long knives and get rid of everybody. But they don't do it before.
You know, it's so interesting. Even before the Nancy Pelosi vote, she sat down with the squad. They came out of the meeting, and we didn't hear much from them. It's like, you'll have your time. Now is not your time. And then she made an agreement. I'm leaving in 2 years. And she did. So she was – the natives weren't restless. They knew she was going. So Speaker Johnson never wanted this job. So Scalise fails. Jordan fails. Tom Emmer fails. And then they go, Johnson, yeah, you're our guy. And then as soon as he gets up, they go, oh, you're terrible.
I mean, close enough. Close enough for now. That's
right.
That's all we need is to focus on the important things. And it's so irritating because I don't know. I don't know how much credit I have to give the squad because having to wait until Nancy Pelosi's done. She's 180 years old.
So well, that's true. It was only 2 years.
It wasn't exactly a nail biter.
All right. So we'll see what's going to happen. Mm. The other thing that we were talking about earlier was what's going on with NPR.
Yeah.
So the editor comes out after 25 years there. He just writes a column on the Free Press and he writes that. I can't take it anymore. He goes, I'll never vote for Donald Trump. But for the most part, I cannot believe how people will never gave him a shot. They never owned up to the Russian hoax being a hoax. They never owned up to the laptop being real. And they want diversity of people, but not diversity of opinion. And we're reading this. And at the end of it, it says he's still employed at the NPR. Well, today, 5-day suspension by the new CEO.
Yeah, and the new CEO, I invite everyone to take a look at her Twitter account.
What is it?
She's a full-on wackadoo. She is almost like a parody account of a hyperactive the awfuls, the overeducated white liberal women. And they don't get it. They don't get it, even in their statement after. When this guy came out, and I recommend everybody read that piece that he wrote for Barry Weiss's Substack.
Fantastic.
You cannot parody them anymore, that they have these meetings where everyone is broken up into subgroups and subgroups and subgroups of affinity groups by color, by gender, by race. And you wonder, how do they get any work done? And they don't, because they work for NPR. They don't work for a real company, which would get judged on results.
And they always say we're an inherently racist country, and that's what that editor had to say. And Yuri Berliner was like, excuse me, not really. Here's a little of what he said about the Russia story.
And for us, I think a lot of newspapers, use documents or anonymous sources. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on
25
constantly,
times.
A lot. I think I counted 25 times. And in most of those conversations, he sort of alluded to evidence he may have had or sort of teased out, Russia, he was colluding or the campaign was colluding with Russia. And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And, I think we sort of learned the story kind of disappeared. But to me, that was like a time for like, what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Mm. Like, despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently.
Almost like, do you remember when Bush and the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
We all thought they had nuclear weapons. What happened? What groupthink? The CIA, the FBI, all these news organizations say, oh, yeah, they have them. They were wrong. There was a whole evaluation after that, and the groupthink and things were evaluated. They kept moving on. And one of the questions and one of the statements was, well, the laptop may have been real, but it hurt Trump, so it doesn't matter. Really? Thank you for covering the news.
Yeah, that's pretty disgraceful. And you know, the funny thing, too, is they're so obsessed with diversity and all that. And if you look at who listens to NPR, I think the numbers were 6% black and I think under 10% Latino, which is half those numbers of the population. Now, if you look at those numbers, you know who beats those numbers in support? Donald Trump. Donald Trump has more African-American and Hispanic support than NPR does. So it shows that these rituals they go through, they're not really designed to reach people. They're to make nervous white liberals feel better about themselves.
So the one person I found, you know, you said to me, Dad, the world's getting crazy. It's getting you nervous. Yeah. People like this guy. Mm. Portions of Jon Stewart and Bill Maher almost every episode, who will never vote for Trump, probably never vote for Republican, but like the country. He had Katie Couric on. Did you play any of this last night?
No, we're going to talk about this today.
So you didn't do it on Gutfeld?
No, not yet.
Okay, Joe DeVito here from Gutfeld. Are you going to be a panelist tonight?
I am.
Where are you going to be sitting? Do you know?
I don't know. So it's me, Kat Tyrus, and Emily. So I would imagine where I'm sitting is the least
Emily
of their
Austin?
Concerns. No, Emily Campagna.
Oh, Campagna.
Yeah, they might not even allow me in the studio with them.
Could I just say by far, and I hope Tyrus is not listening, she will have the best deltoids on your show.
She's pretty jacked.
I mean, yeah, and that, she's got the V. I mean.
She's got the separation.
Right. And the thing is, if I had the same thing, I would not have sleeves on. No, who has the V? The Rock has the V. He doesn't have sleeves. Gronk had the V.
Yeah.
Right here. And Emily Campagna. Have you ever heard all three of them mentioned in the same? No?
I'm not having a push-up contest with any of them.
I think
I might take my chances with Kat in an upper body strength
absolutely.
Contest.
Kat against Joe DeVito. I see a spinoff special. Here's Katie Couric on Club Random talking about trying to figure out who's voting for Trump. Cut 16.
Socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment is a lot. And anti-intellectualism and elitism is what is driving many of these anti-establishment. Which are Trump voters. I don't know if you've ever been jealous of what someone else has or resentful. It is such a corroding and bitter, almost bile feeling.
So you're removed from that. You're listening to this.
Yeah.
You're in the news every day trying to make fun, have fun with it. Where do you think she's coming from?
She sounds like a snot. Like what we used to call those people back in high school, snotty. And again, they have to be dragged toward reality. They see what's happening in the world, and they just won't change their opinion of it. That, yeah, people are fed up, and we're looking at the people who call themselves elites. They're not good at anything. They may be credentialed, but I always say if they're so smart in these colleges, why do they rack up so much student debt? You don't see when the grid goes down, you're not going to say, quick, get me a professor of women's studies.
Yes.
You're going to say, get me a plumber and get me an electrician, because in their real world, you are judged on your results. And those are the kind of people she's talking about, calling them stupid, essentially.
Which is – I always think about this. So, for example, Trump didn't really win the Russia election. Then he deserves to be impeached because he was going after his political opponent. And then the pandemic, you know, he shouldn't have the job because he was putting everything to the states. He was actually giving Democratic states what they needed the best he can, trying to figure it out. And then I don't love the way Trump acted after the election. I'll give you that.
Hmm.
But then when people still rallied around him, when he does, in fact, win the primaries, instead of saying, man, how did I get it wrong? They say, how did I end up in a country with people that have gotten it so wrong?
Yeah.
And let me figure out why they're so wrong. Mm. They didn't go to school enough. They're so bitter. They didn't have success like I have had my entire life.
Yeah.
So I'm the cool guys. I'm sorry there's so many people uncool. Let's figure out why they're so angry instead of saying, you know, what is it about Trump that we're missing? And I thought this exchange was something I want Joe DeVito to listen to. This is Governor Sununu, who was backing Nikki Haley, a critic of Trump, but he says, I'm a Republican. I want him to win.
And you believe that a president who contributed to an insurrection should be president again?
As does 51% of America, George. I mean, really, I understand you're part of the media. I understand you're in this New York City bubble or whatever it is. But you got to look around what's happening across this country. They're not, it's not about just supporting Trump. It's getting rid of what we have today. It's about understanding inflation is crushing families. It's understanding that this border issue is not a Texas issue. It's a 50-state issue, right? That has to be brought under control. It's about that type of elitism that the average American is just sick and tired of. And it's a culture change. That's what I'm supporting. That's what most of America right now is looking to support and wants to change there. So, again, I know you're shocked that the Republican governor is supporting a Republican president and a Republican ticket, but it's about the ticket. It's about up and down the ballot.
Well said. Well said. I agree with that. I think the problem you have with people like Katie Couric is they're so invested in how smart they are that they're in love with the scent of their own flatulence, and they can't admit that someone they disagree with could be right, even about facts. And that's they will not budge on that.
It's crazy. I just think that it's a lack of humility too. Yeah. I get up every day. I can't believe how much I don't know. I think they get up every day and they can't believe how much I don't know.
I think that's the way a lot of people wake up, Brian. They're amazed at how much you don't know.
Right.
They're blown away by it.
There's no reason for you to gang up on me. I am the host, and I did ask you to come on. Hey, more with Joe DeVito in just a moment. We're following a few stories that I think are worthy of staying up on. First off, it's pretty clear that the Israelis are going to do something, and it's also clear Iran thinks so too. They said that we have weapon systems that we have not seen yet. They also say that the Russians have helped him with anti-aircraft fire. We're following the fact that Donald Trump is now being the judge in the Donald Trump case is looking at whether to charge him with contempt like the prosecutors have asked for because of a couple of posts on Truth Social. And lastly, it looks like a motion to vacate has been going to be put forward by Thomas Massie joining Marjorie Taylor Greene. If we're to believe their words, we're about to see their action. Crazy times. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
When you start chanting death to America in America. I mean, I got it. Charlottesville was real bad when they were chanting death to the, what was it, Jews will not replace us. But on American soil, and there are people who see me say this, oh, he's a conservative now. I'm a conservative. I have not changed. I always liked America and thought death to it was bad.
Right. So this is what gives me hope, Joe DeVito.
Yeah.
The lead writer. Do you mind if I say lead writer? Might cause tension?
Yeah.
All right. Writer
for Gutfeld.
For Gutfeld, and who's going to be on the panel tonight. But when you see that, and that should not get applause. That should not be what a stand-up comedian does on Friday night, right?
Yeah. It's the risky statement of I'm against chanting death to Jews. That's
right. And to America.
Death to America. Sure. And it's so strange that Bill Maher will say things like that, and you can hear his audience sometimes. They don't know what to do. That's how removed from reality and classic liberalism the left has become, that an audience of people is not sure how they should feel about being against death to America.
It almost reminds me of when Jon Stewart said that thing to Stephen Colbert during the middle of the pandemic when he said, you know, it came from a wet market. He goes, I don't know. I think he goes, you ever hear that? I don't know. Maybe it came from the place that's a virology lab that said coronavirus. And he just said that. And like you saw the look on Stephen Colbert's face. How dare you say that? Where'd that come from?
Oh,
because they only hang out in their lane.
Yeah, I thought someone was going to come out with one of those giant syringes and put it in Jon Stewart's neck to make him shut up.
Because he's the executive producer. It's tough to do. Well,
here's the thing that was annoying about that. I appreciate him coming out and saying that, but he was a year and a half too late in saying it. Other people, they took the bullet for that.
No question.
But yeah, you see Colbert was ready to dive over the desk and tackle him.
Right. So when you see Bill Maher just say, look, obviously he hangs out with everybody.
Yeah.
So he got the same thing with Joe Rogan. Like when you hear it, because he interviews so many different people, he's never going to jump on the Trump train or off it.
Yeah.
It's going to be, no, what the hell was he doing the other day? Like Trump had an interesting expression about what happened to Gettysburg. And evidently he thought Robert E. Lee had an Irish accent or Irish brogue. And that was just funny. And Jon Stewart did it last night. And it was just funny. He just did the whole thing. So what? That's okay.
That's funny in the way that it's amusing, where Biden falling off stage is funny in a way that's depressing.
Tragic.
And very concerning.
Right. Here is What's the other thing I wanted to bring you to? Yeah, so I hand you that story when we walk in. Rob Schneider speaking to the Senate committee. And evidently a few people walked out, cut him off after 10 minutes. They said he was too
vulgar.
Too vulgar. What's your reaction to that?
Because
Rob comes on your show all
the time. Yeah, he does. I don't know the specifics of it, but you got to know the room. You know, you have to know if you're doing a private gig or corporate gig. And if they say work clean, you have to find out what that means to them. So I don't know if they told him work clean or if they said do what you do.
And, say the story. They said work clean.
Yeah. So if you asked to work clean, to me, it's always been if you have a problem with that, decline the gig. But I think you show respect to the client and that you show up. You know, I know there's gigs. I have a gig coming up where I have to work clean and it's in a corporate environment and they've expressed their concerns and I'm going to work with them on that because if I don't like it, I can go somewhere else. You know, if you want to be an artiste, go right ahead. But no one else has to pay for it.
Right. That's you end up at the Boston Comedy Club at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, evening.
This shows how long it's been since you did stand up.
The Boston
Comedy Club's been gone for about 15 years.
Really? That you know what I saw there? Everyone just said, look at that guy in the corner. I go, who is it? They go, Jay Mohr. He's the hottest comedian in the country. He was pretty hot for a while, right?
He was. His manager at the time was, I think, the guy who owned the Boston Comedy Club. Yeah.
Full circle. Yeah. I had no idea. Yeah. No, he was probably telling me. You know who he married?
I think he's married to Nikki Cox now?
No. Unless he divorced and married someone I don't know. Jeannie Buss, the owner of the
Lakers.
Oh,
that's right. I'm thinking of his previous wife. Yeah, yeah. Jeannie Buss from the Lakers. That's a pretty good move.
If you like security and good tickets.
Courtside seats, yeah.
Absolutely. Where can we see you? We can see you in Bananas in Rutherford, New Jersey, April 26th and 27th, May 10th and 11th at Wonders Theater, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, at the Brokerage right by my house. But again, please don't come over.
Honk as you drive by. Throw eggs.
Can I come to this?
Security might be an issue.
So I'm paying full price.
I told them not to let you in.
June 14th and 15th. You still have two shows a night?
I think it's one show and then maybe two on the Saturday.
And if you sell out, do I get credit?
You get nothing.
Come on, WABC carries this show. An invoice.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.